Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by Patreon listeners like you. If you would like to join their ranks, go to patreon.com/readthebard. That's patreon.com/RIPHEBARD. And follow Sherry on all the various social networks at readthebard. That's RIPHEBARD. And now, from the studios in San Diego, California, here's Sherry.
And welcome to Chatting with Sherry. I want to let my Patreon viewers know that I'm going to have a couple of new little shout-outs for you that's be coming up for you, so it's kind of cool. So pay attention to the board. Today I want to welcome back Andy Penquin. We both have colds, so both our throats are a little off, so please forgive any coughs or sniffles. Hi, Andy. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much. Did I hear Andy Penguin?
Is that what I said?
I think so. You can tell how sick we both are because neither of us remembers exactly. In case it was Penguin, my name is actually Andy Pelliquin, though that would be a really awesome name as a pen name. Andy Penguin is, you know, like for writing a thriller series or something.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. That's one of my fears, and I've done it a few times, is messing up people's names, so I'm sorry if I did call you Penguin.
That's totally cool. I think when I start writing our Antarctic-set thriller novels, murder mysteries, it's going to be my pen name.
Okay. I did something good then. Well, at least it's one of my favorite animals. I love penguins.
Penguins are pretty awesome. In this show that I'm watching on Netflix, Atypical, it's about a kid with autism. He really gets into like all these facts about penguins and stuff. He's also a real penguin fan. There's some pretty interesting stuff in there.
Oh yeah, they're really cool. Penguins are fascinating creatures. Are you a documentary nut? I get a lot of my inspiration from documentaries.
I've seen a few here or there, but I'm not so much a documentary guy. Honestly, it's so hard to find time to do things like, watch the TV shows that I like or read the books that I like, that those kind of things like watching documentaries is difficult.
Mine are more like Mysteries at the Museum. That's one of my I do like all kinds of documentaries, and I just saw a really interesting one on the royal family. But I watch a lot of Mysteries at the Museum because it has a lot of information in short little 5 or 10 minute clips. And then what you can do if you're interested, which I always am, is go crazy and start researching it if you want to use it for some kind of story or book, which is what I usually do.
That is cool.
So, shout out to Mysteries of the Museum and Don Wildman. How do you get your inspiration? Where do you go in your? Is it from your past? Is it from books? Is it from listening, eavesdropping conversations? How do you go about it?
You know, it's funny. That's one of the more common questions that we authors get asked. And the truth is that it's so hard to say where inspiration comes from. One time, I wrote an entire poem for someone based on these little blue whales drawn into the side of one of those plastic above-ground pools. You know, like, inspiration comes from the most random of places. And sometimes it leads to, you know, grand epic novel series, and then sometimes it's just like a little thought like, oh man, what if I did that? And so I'm sort of always looking. You know, when I'm driving down the street, I'm just looking around, watching people or checking out billboards and just sort of keeping my mind open to whatever comes. And inevitably, every time I drive, I come up with some random idea, whether it's some, like I said, some big story idea or just some small change to an idea that I had before, or It's amazing. Inspiration really just strikes from nowhere. It would be fascinating to find out how, you know, like, to get into the neurology and find out what structures of the brain are responsible for imagination and creativity and stuff.
Funny. I write all kinds of stuff. One of the things I do write is fan fiction, and I had this thing where there was a challenge that you break the fourth wall. And everybody was breaking the fourth wall by just having the characters talk. And I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to have the readers give you feedback and say, this is what I'd like the story to have. And it was so much fun. I just finished that story. And the last one was, I'd like to know who the Pirate King is. And for some reason, that led me to put in Gilbert and Sullivan's songs, I am the Pirate King.
Oh, wow.
It was like, had nothing to do with Gilbert and Sullivan, but I was like, oh, that's an interesting, okay, why don't I go there? I mean, my mind
that's
goes
awesome.
Every which way. It was a lot of fun because you never know where it was going to go and what these people are. I mean, one person asked for kittens, so I put kittens in the shower.
yeah. You know, I was having a conversation with someone, I don't know, a week or so ago, when we were talking about how to write an algorithm for creativity. I don't remember what movie or TV show it was in, about basically creating artificial intelligence that has the ability to create in a way that humans can. You know, humans have this desire, this innate desire to create art. And art doesn't always make sense. And art especially makes connections that should not or do not exist in real life, but because of the imagination of the artist, they can find these logical connections that work. I mean, look at magic. Magic is one of the classic examples. It shouldn't work. It doesn't work in real life. But when we step into the pages of a fantasy novel or, you know, historical fiction or whatever genre, there's these little hints of magic, and all of a sudden, because of the way it's explained in this context, it absolutely makes sense. So it was like, okay, to make an algorithm for a robot to write, you know, an artificial intelligence to write, it would be like having, you know, a random generator to come up with one idea, and then having a random generator to come up with another idea, and then using like a logic algorithm, or again, I have zero experience on the matter, so you know, you can take it with a grain of salt, but basically finding ways to logically connect these two ideas, and that would sort of simulate human creativity and imagination in a way that could be quantified for an artificial intelligence.
Actually drives a poor artificial intelligent creature mad because
yes,
they're not
for sure
for it. I mean, we're born with imagination, so we understand that it's separate and it's not real and that it's fantasy, at least hopefully you do. But an artificial intelligence who doesn't know that, who just has somebody like put like a chip in, that would make them crazy.
What's cool, I read this article a few months ago about how they were using stories to teach sort of human morals and ethics to artificial intelligence. It's like they would create these stories specifically to teach, you know, courage or bravery or self-sacrifice or honesty, things like that. And because of the structure of the story, it was helping these artificial intelligences to learn it more easily than just saying, you know, there is, you know, everything's black and white. The truth is that nothing is black and white. So using the story context made it easier for them to teach the artificial intelligences these human ethics.
That's a fascinating idea.
Yeah.
This is happening at something?
I'm sorry?
Is this happening at some institute or something that they're actually doing that?
I believe
that?
So. Yes, yes. I think the article was a year or so old when I found it, so I can't remember the name of the institute. But there was some place that was using these stories, and it's such an awesome example of how fiction is so much more than just a diversion, you know, a distraction. So many people look at specifically fantasy, science fiction, dystopian, these more speculative fiction genres, and they say, you know, there's no real value from them. You know, you can learn from history, historical fiction, and, of course, nonfiction. And romance is true to life, and thrillers are set in modern life, and there's, you know, a lot you can learn from that. But when it comes to science fiction and fantasy, it's too fantastical. It's not worth it. But the cool thing about, or the thing that I love most about fantasy, is that you can use these fantastical settings to really focus on the human element, the things that drive us to do what we do and why we do it. As an example, the character that I'm working on right now is a half-demon assassin, which, you know, right off the bat, that is just absolutely fantastical. Demons don't exist in society, and an assassin, you know, assassins are very different sorts of characters. But in this context, it works. And so the whole point of this character, or one thing that I'm finding is so important about this character, is showing this need to belong, the need for human connection. No matter how strong this assassin is, no matter how much of a badass he is when it comes to killing people, at the end of the day, he goes to, you know, his little tent or his little house, and he has nothing. And so human connections become the most important thing to him. And in a way that transforms him into more of a heroic character, because those human connections are what drive him to do the right thing, or they're what drive him to sacrifice himself or put himself in harm's way for the sake of others. And what on the face of it is this grand epic story to save the world is really just this look at a guy who is trying to find his place in a world where he doesn't belong, and that is really the story of each one of us.
Yeah, and actually, with me, I think fantasy and science fiction are a great place to show people what's going on in our current world without getting into.
Yes. Absolutely.
I mean, that's what Gene Roddenberry did with the original Star Trek. He went against the Vietnam War, but he put it in the 24th century. So, he was saying a lot of stuff, and nobody paid any attention because it was in the future and these strange creatures and everything. But he was really talking against racism, overpopulation, the Vietnam War, all kinds of stuff. But he put it in the future. I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about science fiction.
Yeah, I love both science fiction and fantasy. It's sort of two sides of the same coin. Fantasy is often a look backward. You know, the things that we did wrong in the past, as an example, like you say, racism, sexism, classism, all of these different things, all these mistakes that we made in the past, and holding it up as a mirror and saying, look, we are so far past these medieval, primitive, violent societies, so let's be better than them. It's sort of saying, look, here's how terrible we things were in the past, now let's be better than that. And science fiction is like, okay, this is how bad things could get if we're not careful. So let's change who we are the way we are now so that we avoid these horrors, you know, mass genocide, destructions of entire solar systems, you know, in space war with aliens or whatever it is. You know, at the end, it all comes down to the people who are making the decisions in the stories. And science fiction says, we are here. If we are not careful, this is where we could end up. So let's take steps to be careful. Let's curb, you know, the excesses of humanity, of greed, of violence, of all these different things. And so that's what it's my reason for wanting to write fantasy and, of course, sci-fi one day.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's one of the great treasures about writing science fiction and fantasy is that you can make commentary like that, but it's hidden. I mean, Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling said that she put a lot of stuff in there, but, you know, if you just look at Harry Potter as an innocent kid, you're not going to see that. But as an adult and you start looking at it, you see all the stuff. I mean, there is Nazism, and there's all kinds of stuff in there that an adult will see that a child will not.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's fascinating. Okay, we have reached the halfway point, so this is the point where you get to push your little book to your heart's content.
All right. Well, I guess I will talk about my Queen of Thieves series because the last book just came out. So the Queen of Thieves series is a three-book series, a trilogy, that basically examines how a child, an innocent child, is turned into a criminal, someone who's willing to kill and steal and do whatever it takes to survive. And so the premise is criminals are made, not born. So she starts out as a young girl, 6 years old, when we first, when the story starts. And through a series of unfortunate events, she ends up being sold to the Thieves Guild of her city. And she goes through all sorts of terrible things as they break her, erase her memories and transform her into one of them, into a thief. And the first book follows her from the age of 8 to 18 as she's going through these trials and tests to become a thief. And then the second and third books follow her as she realizes that this society is the wrong place for her, and it's turning her into something she doesn't want to be, so she tries to get out. And then all the challenges that she has to face to find her freedom. But then because of the things that were done to her, she goes about using, criminal methods. And so it's this interesting look at the evolution of someone's psyche, how they, how little things change them completely. You go from an innocent child who is happy living with her parents and wants to grow up to be a dancer and cares for her garden and is so happy at her newborn sister, to a 20-some-year-old woman who kills without hesitation or who steals from the richest people in the city, starts a war, all kinds of stuff. And it's this small journey, one day at a time, one week at a time, but everything slowly changes and hardens her. And that's sort of one thing that I wanted to illustrate about a lot of people in society today, is that, you see people who have ended up killing someone, murderers, or people who have committed horrible war crimes, even American soldiers who are accused or, who get who are on trial for all sorts of things that they did abroad. And it's the whole point is to illustrate that it's not an overnight change. It's one day at a time, one small decision, one small test, that instead of choosing the high road, you take the low road or the easy road, even to the hurt of others, and that leads you down the path to becoming this hard, dark, often amoral sort of person.
Wow. It's such a complicated idea. It's only three books? Are you going to do another series?
It's only three books. I'm sorry?
Are you going to do another series?
With that character, no. No, that
okay.
is it's a three-book series. There is a book sort of 3.5, a bonus after sequel that it actually just released today. And that's called Traitor's Fate. And that was a thing that I wanted to write because I love this character. Her name is Alana. And as I was writing her, I just fell in love with her strength of character, her willpower, her determination, her drive to succeed. And so when I finished writing the third book in the trilogy and I typed the end, it was almost depressing because I would never be able to tell more of her story again. So then I came up with this sequel that has a little bit of her, and then it connects her story to the story of my forthcoming Hero of Darkness series.
Cool. So you've connected it with your new series?
Yes, exactly. In fact, she is directly responsible for everything that happens to the character because she hires him to kill the person. The character is an assassin. She hires him to kill someone who was harming people in her city. So when he goes and kills this guy, it sets chain of events into motion throughout the first book of the Hero of Darkness series that sends him on this epic quest to discover who he is and all sorts of awesome stuff.
Cool. That sounds really fun. Book available, and do you have a website where people can get it?
Yeah, you can find all the details on my website, andypeliquin.com. Or also on Amazon. I'm on Facebook. Basically, I'm everywhere as Andy Peliquin.
Okay. And it's already out. You can buy it now.
Yes, exactly. It will be at 99 cents for about 1 week from today. So get it while it's discounted.
Get it while it's hot.
Exactly.
That's what I always say. Okay, we have about 10 minutes. Do you have any upcoming events or interviews or anything you'd like to plug?
I know I have an event in Orange County on the 10th of March at a bookstore. I don't remember the name of the bookstore, unfortunately. I feel like such a heathen. But right now I'll be doing a lot of events online. Actually, I have my podcast, the Fantasy Fiends podcast, where every week we discuss not only great fantasy stories, but also the themes that drive the stories. As an example, last episode we talked about sadism and how sadism isn't just, you know, people who cackle with glee as they torture their victims, but there are a startling number of people who have what's called everyday sadism, and these things, these sort of sadistic tendencies, and it doesn't make them bad people. It's just one of these psychological things that we have to deal with. Or we sort of get into the deeper, more human elements that drive fantasy stories. And it's something that I love. It's what I do when I write, and it's something that I love talking about with all of our guests.
That's really cool. What's the name of your podcast?
It's called The Fantasy Fiends Podcast.
Blog Talk?
We do it on YouTube and Podbean.
Podbean, okay. So check it out.
Yeah,
on
we
Podbean
do live,
and YouTube.
Yeah, we do live YouTube broadcasts every Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time.
Cool. And what do you have? So you have this book coming out that's a series that's coming out that's new. Do you have any other things that are coming out that you want to talk about? Any new stuff?
For now, that's it for me. I mean, I've got an anthology that I'm putting together that will be releasing at the end of March, but that's more than a month and a half away, and it's still very hush-hush, so I don't want to say too much.
I love this. I love the hush-hush.
Yes.
So we're going to talk a little bit about something that I'm very interested in. When you're working on your writing and your focus, where do you go? Are you in a room, like an office or your bedroom or somewhere? Are you outside, or do you write at work? Where do you write?
Okay, so I work from home. I'm a freelance blogger, copywriter, ghostwriter. So all of my work is from home. So I have a nice office set up in my house, so I just do everything there. You know, I go from writing my articles and my blog posts in the morning, and then in the afternoon after workout and lunch and sort of getting clearing my head, then I go back to my office and sit down and I write my stories.
Do you ever like to do something, I mean, that's really professional, but do you ever do something like where you end up writing where it's not that professional, taking a hike and all of a sudden you get inspiration and you just sit down one of the benches that are usually out there and start working on it, or under a tree or something. Do you do something that isn't all pristine and clean?
You know, I have a notebook that I carry with me everywhere I go, and I'm always writing down ideas, but that's as close as I come to doing it like that, just because I find that I need sort of the structured setting and my keyboard and all of that to be able to really make the ideas flow. Like the basic gist of the ideas, I'll often come up with them while driving even, and so I have to pull over and write them down or record them on my phone. Or while I'm hanging out with friends, I've got my notebook handy so I can just write down what I'm thinking of. But to actually write in on large scale like that, no, I can't, because I have terrible handwriting.
I don't understand. I have terrible handwriting, but I can read it. You're like the third writer I've talked to who said, I have terrible handwriting, so I never do it longhand. And I'm like, What do you mean you can't read your own writing? I can even read my dad's handwriting, which was even worse than mine.
Well, it's often like so much work to write with a pen and paper that I just won't do it.
Oh.
Like even when I'm jotting down notes, it still feels like so much work.
Aww. Okay. We've come to the end of the show. I just want to thank you for coming on. It was really lovely having you back again, and I hope you get over your cold soon.
Thank you so much for having me. It was always—it's so nice to come and talk with you again.
Thank you. And so remember to look up Andy's books and whatever site you like. You said everything, right? Twitter, Facebook.
Yep. All social media sites.
Okay. And check out his podcast. Thank you, Andy, for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by listeners like you. You can support this program by leaving a rating or a review at iTunes, at Sherry's Patreon account, patreon.com/readthebard, or by following Sherry on all the various social media at readthebard. That's R-I-T-H-E-B-A-R-D. Once again, that's readthebard, R-I-T-H-E-B-A-R-D. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.